When I was a little boy, when I was just a boy, and the devil would call my name, I would say, now, who do you think you're fooling? I'm a consecrated boy. I'm a singer in the Sunday choir. Now, you may ask yourself, what does Paul Simon, a nice Jewish boy from Queens, know about singing in a Sunday choir? Everything he needs to know. Willa Cather said, there are only two or three human stories, and they go on repeating themselves as fiercely as if they had never happened before. According to Joseph Campbell, it may be there is only one story, the story of the hero with a thousand faces, the monomyth he calls the hero's journey. All life is a matter of call and response. From the moment of birth, child and mother are engaged in an intimate relation of calling, listening, and responding. The psychologist George Herbert Mead noted as much in his theory of the social self. The self only emerges, he says, by observing and interacting with others, responding to others' opinions about oneself, and internalizing opinions and internal feelings about oneself. But there is more. Paradoxically, we are each individually unique with our own destiny to choose or deny. Genius is the Latin word the Romans used to describe not a really, really smart person, but an inner spirit unique to each of us that watches over us, guiding us to our calling. The hero's journey comes from mythologist Joseph Campbell. A myth is not an event that did or did not happen. It is something that is happening now to us. The story simply hides and reveals our human experience in symbol, metaphor, and archetypes. Myth is to the human collective what a dream is to the individual. Both probe the unconscious reality unavailable to the rational mind alone, that part of our existence not readily corralled by equations and test tubes. So let's suspend judgment of fact and fiction for a moment and drink freely from the well of myth along the hero's journey. The hero's journey is a circle. It always begins with the call, Campbell says. One way or another, a guide must come to say, look, you're in sleepy land, wake, come on a trip. There is a whole aspect of your consciousness, your being, that's not been touched. So here we are in our ordinary world, the known world. We are Dorothy in Kansas, Bilbo Baggins in Hobbiton, Luke Skywalker on his sleepy farm on the remote planet Tatooine. But something shakes us and says, wake up. In The Wizard of Oz, it is the tornado. In The Hobbit, Gandalf the Wizard arrives. A message from Obi-Wan Kenobi comes to Luke Skywalker. Moses has his burning bush. Jesus is John the Baptist and the voice from above at the River Jordan. For Representative John Lewis in Troy, Alabama, it was seeing the whites only and colored signs. It was going to get a library card and being denied that called him from his ordinary life. Something stirred and he answered the call while others stayed put. For Ruth Bader Ginsburg, it was not being able to get a job despite her outstanding credentials and references because she was a woman, a mother, and a Jew. She answered the call and became a civil rights attorney and champion of women's rights that we know her to be. On the hero's journey, after the call comes acceptance of the call, or sometimes a refusal, resulting in frustration, disaster, or worse. Someone who refuses the call may become the villain in someone else's story. Darth Vader, the fallen angel Lucifer, Judas. Did you know that Adolf Hitler wanted to be an artist? At age 18, he took his inheritance and moved to Vienna to live and study, but he gave it up. Once you accept the call, you cross the threshold from the known world and into the unknown. Mentors, helpers, and allies arrive to aid in the journey. Teachers, writers, Yoda, Glinda the Witch of the South, young John Robert Lewis, the boy from Troy, wrote a letter to Dr. King and found his mentor. Next come the challenges, trials, and temptations, and finally, the abyss, death and resurrection. In the stories of the Hebrew and Christian scriptures, the number 40 often denotes a long time, often a time of trial. 40 days and nights of the rain in Noah's flood. Moses and the children of Israel wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. It's Frodo fighting the pull of the ring, Dorothy and her wicked witch of the West. After his call at the River Jordan with the baptism by John the Baptist, Jesus went to the desert on a vision quest, as it were, with a 40-day fast. He came out of that famished, and the devil called his name. He took Jesus to a high place and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and offered all their glory and power if Jesus would only worship the devil. If you know anything about Jesus, you know he came not to be served, but to serve. And so, of course, he refused the devil. "Who do you think you're fooling?" he said. It's interesting to note that the power of the kingdoms was the devil's to give. Then finally, the hero returns, a person transformed, ready to serve others. In Buddhism, there is the figure of the Bodhisattva, a fully awake, enlightened one who just before entering Nirvana comes for full circle, comes back to her community to compassionately help others on the path to end suffering. Gautama Siddhartha was a Hindu prince who for the first 18 years of his life indulged in every pleasure available to him in the palace his parents had built to protect him. Perhaps you know him better for the title he later gained, the Buddha, meaning the one who woke up. Gautama was his name and pleasure was his game. But curiosity drew him out, and on four successive days, he saw four sights. First, he saw an old man, weak and frail. The next day, he saw a sick person. On the third day, he saw a corpse being carried to cremation. Finally, on the fourth day, he saw a holy man who was apparently content and at peace with the world. Once Gautama had seen how the other half lived, he could not go back, but instead went searching to understand the causes of the suffering inherent in human life. You know the story of Moses. To protect him from infanticide by the Egyptian pharaoh, Moses' mother hid him in a basket in the Nile River. The crying baby was found by Pharaoh's daughter. Moses' sister stood nearby, and she asked Pharaoh's daughter if she should fetch a Hebrew woman to nurse him, which she did. And then Pharaoh's daughter raised Moses as her own, an Egyptian prince. When Moses was grown, this prince, like Siddhartha, went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor, enslaved. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, and so impetuously Moses killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Notice that for both Moses and Gautama Siddhartha, it is the sight of suffering that first stirs them. Moses escapes capture by fleeing to the desert in Midian. He marries and leads an obscure life, tending his father-in-law's sheep out in the desert. This part of the story resonates with me. Have you ever felt like I have, stalled in the desert, waiting for the call of some direction? In this prequel to the great Exodus story, Moses hangs out for 40 years in his workaday life until one day he sees a burning bush in the desert. It is burning, but it is not consumed, and he hears a voice that identifies itself only as being itself. I am that I am. Tell Pharaoh that I am sent you. Tell Pharaoh to let my people go. The time has come. Moses objects, and in a near refusal of the call, demurs. I have never been eloquent, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue, he protested. But Yahweh gives Moses an ally, his brother Aaron, who has the gift of gab. Between the first violent outburst and the burning bush, there were 40 years. I take comfort in knowing that the journey is never a smooth, straight path. There are always dips, missteps, diversions, trials. For many people, the public lynching of George Floyd by Minneapolis police in May was a blaring call to revisit our national history of racial oppression. I grew up in the mostly white suburbs east of LA. I never asked as a child why all my neighbors were white, why all the police and firefighters and most of my teachers were white. I hardly thought of myself as white. As Toni Morrison said nearly 30 years ago, in this country, American means white. Everybody else has to hyphenate. This is a perfect illustration of privilege, that you just get to be the default person in your society. No questions asked. Much later, I learned that between 1950, during World War I, and 1975, 6 million Black individuals made the heroic journey from the Jim Crow South, only to find James Crow in the cities of the North and West, like Harlem, Chicago, Milwaukee, Oakland, and for me, in nearby LA. I was 12 years old when Watts exploded in flames. I wondered why, but not much. I saw the white families I knew in Compton moving eastward, some all the way to Orange County. As I grew older and expanded my education, both in personal conversations with people of color and the books I read, I began to understand what people of color have always understood, that you cannot grasp the meaning of America's history without taking into account the social construct of race that exists solely for the purpose of the protection of white supremacy to the detriment of all others. Listen to James Baldwin explain in the letter he wrote in 1962 to his 15-year-old nephew. White people are in effect still trapped in a history which they do not understand. And until they understand it, they cannot be released from it. They have had to believe for many years and for innumerable reasons that Black men are inferior to white men. Many of them indeed know better. But as you will discover, people find it very difficult to act on what they know. To act is to be committed, and to be committed is to be in danger. So friends, Where were you when you first saw the video of those LAPD officers beating Rodney King? What was your reaction? How about Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Eric Gardner, Tamir Rice, Breonna Taylor? If you are white and perhaps even uncomfortable owning the term, because after all, we are all the same, one human race, so why do we still need such labels? Understand that that is a luxury no one else has who is not white. This is not, however, about guilt or shame, but about making the fitting response to the call of our history. Once more from James Baldwin, I'm not interested in anybody's guilt. Guilt is a luxury that we can no longer afford. I know you didn't do it, and I didn't do it either. But I am responsible for it because I am a man and a citizen of this country, and you are responsible for it too, for the very same reason. The heroic journey isn't only the epic adventure of these great mythical figures in legend and history. It is also the daily steps we take when we choose courageously to do and say the right thing. It may be refusing to say stay silent when you hear the prejudicial comment. Michael Esselin has a talk called Coming Out, It's Everybody's Business. He says, coming out is something we all do every time we dare to risk sharing our truth. Every day, our interdependent life provides an opportunity to listen and respond. Every moment is a relational event, a call and a response. We are constantly posed with the question, what is the fitting response in this moment? Mindful of the suffering that surrounds us in the world and our interconnectedness, the fitting response is compassion and the desire to help others, is it not? The hero's journey is not a once-in-a-lifetime tale. It is repeated in its various stages again and again in all of our lives. It starts by listening. I suggest to you that it is not only in the big choices of the vocation you choose that your response matters, but in the way you speak to your partner, how you treat your neighbor or enemy, or simply, what is it you give your attention to? What uncomfortable truths of our history are you educating yourself about? Ruth King wrote a heartfelt book called Mindful of Race, Transforming Racism from the Inside Out, which several of us have read. It grew out of the hard-won life observation as an African-American woman and elder, and her mindfulness practice. Deep listening. If I didn't belong to you, she said, I wouldn't have written this book. If you didn't belong to me, you wouldn't be reading it. I'm you, and you are me. You just don't know it yet. We're here to embrace our membership in each other's lives. As we become more mindful, she says, as we listen, we won't be able to fit so neatly back into our small boxes. Hobbiton will never be the same, and neither will Kansas. Our hearts will naturally incline toward doing what we can to create a more just and equitable human community. There is only one you. There was another, never another like you before now. At the same time, you are not alone. We belong together, inescapably bound together in a web of mutuality, as Dr. King put it. A journey is calling. Only you can pay attention to your own genius within and take those fateful steps across the threshold of the unknown. A journey is calling. Will you listen?